And that was when, that was one of those moments when I thought, okay, there might be more to pitching than just coming up with a great idea, having a great pitch deck, and doing a stunning presentation in front of the clients.
Hi, I'm Joel Pilger. You're listening to episode 49 of the RevThinking Podcast, the conversation between creative entrepreneurs who know the best way to deal with the future is to create it. On today's episode, I am interviewing Marco Fan, consultant at RevThink, and our topic is win the client, not the pitch.
Welcome to RevThinking, the podcast for next generation creative entrepreneurs. Now, here is your host, Joel Pilger.
Hey, it's Joel. Welcome to another episode. We had a break here for a few weeks. It's kind of what happens in the summertime. But I'm actually in Los Angeles, and as you might imagine, I'm in traffic. I'm driving across town from Hollywood to the West Side. But I'm excited to be in Los Angeles because I'm here for a couple of reasons. Not only some client work, helping some studios here in town be their most awesome and amazing selves, but last night was Cohort, the kickoff dinner here in Los Angeles. And man, we had a good time. So this is the quarterly cohorts of creative entrepreneurs. Basically, imagine studio, production company, agency owners getting together and having a private dinner to build community, share insights, and keep moving forward together. It was awesome. Now, if you feel like, dang, I missed out, I would have loved to have come to that. Well, I will tell you, don't feel too bad. It is invitation only. We are curating the group to be only elite creative entrepreneurs. But if you feel like that is you, then by all means, go to revthink.com. You can scroll down to the bottom of any page and contact us and say, hey, I'd love to attend an upcoming cohort dinner. Next week in New York, we are doing the kickoff dinner there on Wednesday the 18th. And I think there are a few seats available. So if you want to jump in and you qualify, then by all means, we would love to have you join us in New York. I'm going to be there. Tim Thompson is going to be there. Our special guest is Garib Shamus, CEO of Ace Comic Con. And our topic is diminutive yet disruptive. So it's going to be really cool. I can just tell you, last night, I think everyone was really excited to say, yes, we should continue doing these dinners quarterly, and let's continue to build community because we are stronger together. All right, if you're hearing my iPhone tell me directions across town, my apologies. This is how it goes here in Los Angeles. All right, also, there are a bunch of owners in other cities that are firing up other chapters. So if you're interested in doing a cohort dinner in Atlanta, D.C., Denver, or San Francisco, by all means, get in touch with us and let us know you're interested. And one other reason I'm here in Los Angeles is tonight, this is Tuesday night, R&D. So this is a motion design group that's just starting in Los Angeles. I know, here's what's crazy, right? There's really not a central, unified motion design user group, hangout, whatever, meetup in Los Angeles, which is insane. And this one is just getting started. It's called R&D. So I'm going to take part in that tonight. Of course, I've got to show up to that. Very excited. That's going to be, it's being hosted or sponsored, led by a bunch of the folks at State Design, who, of course, are clients of ours and good friends. So very much appreciate all their efforts. So be sure to check out R&D when you're in Los Angeles and come to some of those upcoming events. All right, today's podcast, really excited to be having a conversation with Marco Fan. Now, Marco is a consultant here with us at RevThink, and he's our European-based consultant. He's in Munich, Germany, and you'll know right away when you hear his voice that he is German. But he has a unique perspective and background. I'm really excited to hear his story of not only his journey in the industry, how he came to become a consultant, but specifically, Marco has become a very passionate advocate for pitching the right way and new business. And I especially love his perspective where he argues your job in pitching is really to win the client, not the pitch. So that's going to be a very cool conversation couple other announcements. RevThink is going back to Moldova in about a week and a half. We are working with U.S. aid, as in U.S. foreign aid, as well as the country of Sweden, where we are working with an international development company to help stimulate the creative sector in the country of Moldova. And we're doing a conference, speed dating, and an accelerator with the Moldovans for about the next year. We'll be doing this program. So very excited to be back with them. Such wonderful people and creative and talented and smart people. So if you're hearing my voice and you're based in Moldova, I give you a high five. Look forward to seeing you shortly. Then I'm off to Savannah for a week. Yes, going to be at SCAD for a week and looking forward to seeing some of the folks there. That's about all the announcements I have for right now. I want to invite everyone listening that if you want to just stay up to date with what's going on in RevThink land, probably the easiest thing to do if you're an owner or a partner in a creative business is to go to our Seven Ingredients Facebook group. So just go to Facebook, search the number 7 Ingredients, and you'll see that group curated by RevThink. Request access, and that's where you can stay up to date with about 430 or so business owners from around the world. Also, a final announcement. We are opening enrollment for Jumpstart. That's the accelerator that helps small, up-and-coming, ambitious creative businesses reach the next level. And yours truly is the mentor for Jumpstart. We're enrolling through the month of July. We're going to kick off the next 10-week accelerator on August the 7th, I believe. So if you're curious about what Jumpstart is and how it might help you kick your game up to the next level, you can go to revthink.com/accelerators/jumpstart or just hit the Jumpstart link on our homepage. That's probably the easier thing to do. And take a look at that program. It's been awesome, and I can't wait to enroll another round of students or mentees into the program. This is going to be our 5th go-round, and man, it's been really rewarding and satisfying for me to see so many small studios and production companies reaching that next level, doubling their revenue over time, and just all the awesomeness that comes from kicking up your game to the next level. Okay, now to my conversation with Marco Fan, consultant at RevThink. I hope you enjoy the conversation. So from one German to another, Marco.
That was a great intro.
It's great to have you on the podcast. I've been excited to talk with you because I feel like you joined the RevThink team earlier this year, but so many people in our audience have yet to meet you. So say hello.
Hello, audience. Hello, RevThink. Nice to be here. Yeah, I'm really excited too.
Well, tell me, we say you're our Europe foothold, right, for RevThink. But where are you based?
I'm based near Munich in Germany.
And have you spent your career in Germany? Because I know we'll get into obviously some of your background and history in the industry. Have you always worked in Germany?
Actually, I have not. I started my career like right after school. I went to see the world. Went to New Zealand, to Australia, worked there for a couple of years with my girlfriend. And when we came back, we settled in Munich. And by chance, we just got access to a great, great studio over here. And yeah, that's kind of how we kickstarted our careers back in the day.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, well, it's I'm excited because I know where our conversation is heading. And I want to give...
Wait, I don't know.
Yeah, right. You don't know, but I do. I wanted to give people listening a hint of where we're headed, right? Because we're going to eventually start talking about pitching and your love of it. And I think the reason I wanted to mention that is because I feel like your journey has been this evolution of student to practitioner to expert, if you will. And I think as we go through your story, I just want people to sort of know that's kind of where we're headed, because we'll come back to pitching, the art of pitching, the science of pitching, and all that later in the conversation. But first, let me ask you this question. You started off your career, I think, as a designer, or maybe even specifically a brand designer. Is that
Is that how you actually describe it?
Yeah, well, back in the days, I guess you know this term, it was called broadcast designer. I think it's this term is not used anymore, is it?
Right. Not much, but I know the term very well from, back in the 90s, broadcast design was a very popular term.
Damn, I'm getting old. Anyway, and broadcast design basically is what motion design is today, but with a strong focus on a brand. So, which usually would be the TV networks.
Sure, TV channels and
TV channels,
so forth.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, and rebrands and so forth.
Rebrands, yeah. And I was lucky enough to work at a company in Germany, which is called Velvet. And what they did back in the days, they did... the owner, he's just such a remarkable person. He was able to win pitch after pitch and win one big TV station after another.
And were those German stations or were they other countries?
During the time I was working there, it was like almost 8 years. We only once had a Swiss TV station, so they spoke German. But anything else was Eastern Europe or Asia, Middle East, all over the world. Well, pretty much all over the world except Germany.
That's so interesting. And so was there a lot of travel and were there language barriers, but somehow you guys were able to get over those obstacles?
There was a lot of traveling involved. When I started out, I wasn't allowed to travel. I was just a designer. but I grew into this role. And later, when I ran my own company, which started off as a partner company to Velvet.
I see.
And we had to, we did travel a lot. Yeah, and I learned so much about cultures from like Middle East and Asia and Eastern Europe. Also, we also had some American clients, but they were really close to our culture. So that's not a big difference. But it was really, really nice to get to know other people, how they think, how they experience design, how they experience animation, entertainment. And that really helped me to evolve as a designer.
Well, yeah, I can imagine that working with a lot of different cultures, there's an assumption that we market and we advertise the same because we're human beings. But the reality is different cultures speak and communicate and market and advertise in different ways. So I'm guessing you've got a nice breadth or a variety of experience working with those different countries.
Well, as much as you could learn within the short term of a project.
Right.
But what you just said is totally right. Like we experience the world. In the end, this all comes down to pitching. So we try to pitch the way we experience pitching to us. And that's why most creative studios fail pitching their creative services, because they don't really know how others perceive them, how the clients perceive them. And what I learned in with working with different cultures is that it's almost never like what you have in your mind. That's almost never what a client has in its mind. Like when we work with especially Asia, and we had this big, huge brand design, we won a brand rebranding of a big TV station, which involved like 50 sub-channels.
Oh, wow.
And that was a major, major project. And we met like people from India, Malaysia. The headquarters were in Malaysia. So we met people from Malaysia, India, Chinese people, even Middle Eastern people, cultures. That was so a nice variety of cultures and input. It was just so vivid, you know, like, and the way we design and work and think in Germany is very structured and it's very minimalistic.
Yes, of course.
And when we Germans try to be like they ask us to be loud in our designs and to be colorful and to be, I don't know,
outrageous,
probably. Yeah. And when we tried to do that, and we went over our barriers, like our mental barriers. We went so far, and they said, "Okay, now it's starting to get interested." So when we reached our limits, actually, when we passed our limits, that's when they said, "Okay, now we're getting somewhere. We have to go in this way." And it's like, okay. So what I learned there was that what you as a designer have hold in your mind what you think it's true, what the client needs or wants, is almost never the case for the client. They usually want something totally different because they have a different culture, they have a different background. Even if it's the same country and they're working in a big corporation, they see the world, they see the problem differently than you do.
So interesting. Now, let me ask you this, Marco, because you're talking about pitches for rebrands. And just to give people maybe a sense of what we really mean by that, these are not small projects. These are not small pitches. Because I'm guessing when you do rebrands, at least here in the US, it's almost always a large six-figure project, sometimes even seven-figure. So a small rebrand might be $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000. A large one could be $1 million. Were those the size projects that you were working on around the world?
Yeah, exactly. You did the same jobs back in the days, right?
Yes.
And yeah, that always involved big budgets, but you have to see it from the other way as well. It's like, it's not just one movie or one logo you deliver. You deliver one time we had to deliver 1,000 elements, which included like logos, icons, openings, show openings, news openings, stuff like that, and items.
Yeah, there's all these crazy nomenclature, like in the US. It's funny because the terminology is all different because sometimes it's a bumper versus an ID versus a rejoin versus an end page. And I'm sure in Europe you have different terms and in Asia they have different terms. But you're right, these projects are actually huge, massive undertakings. It may be one project called, you know, rebrand my TV network, but the deliverables can be hundreds of elements that take 6 months, 9 months, involve sometimes dozens of decision makers and committees. And, you know, it goes all the way up to the CEO and these kinds of things.
And the thing is, you actually pitch to entertainment companies. So the barrier is really high. The bar is really high. Yeah, so you always have to be at the edge of innovation when it comes to designing and to deliver a new idea, a new design, a new layout, a new brand. And the worst thing is like, it won't take them 2 years and they're going to ask someone else to redo it again. So,
of course. So now tell me, I'm curious to transition. So this is the bright side of your story. These large high ticket pitches and these big projects and working around the world. But I'm sure through those experiences, you experienced some major struggles and some obstacles and had some painful learning experiences as you grew, not only as a designer, but as a communicator and how you do pitches. Tell me a little bit about maybe some of the more painful or difficult seasons you went through.
Well, pitching is always painful. It's like you put all your heart in there. You spend all these hours and you never know if you're going to win. At least that was my reality back in the days. Pitching was like playing soccer blindfolded. You never knew where the goal is. You never knew where to shoot the ball. And so I think probably the worst experience I ever had when it comes to pitching was when we actually pitched in Asia, and it was the project when we pitched for 50 TV channels. And I prepared this beautiful pitch deck, and we flew all the way to Malaysia. And then the presentation day came, and usually it was like my partner, because he was like, I think like 10 or 11 years older than me. He was like a senior, and he had done it like hundreds of times, and he was really good in pitching. I don't know, for some reason he told me, he just told me that I was doing the presentation and I didn't prepare. And I just got a short notice in the cab on the ride to the client.
And so you mean like 10 minutes before the presentation, he says, you're going to run this presentation.
By the way, you're going to run this presentation. And
wow.
Yeah, I did the pitch deck, so I knew what to say, but it was my first time. I'd never done a pitch before. And like, I did pitches, but I've never presented.
Right, and sure. That's huge.
When we walked into this huge, massive building, I got all those sweaty palms, and then we went into this boardroom, and then it wasn't like just a pitch to a producer, an art director, creative director. That was actually a pitch to the CEO. So we were led to the boardroom, and the CEO came in, and like he was like really, how do you say that? It was like such an impressive person, and it was like.
I think the English word you're looking for is intimidating.
Yeah, I was intimidated so much. I felt like a small schoolboy.
Yes.
That's exactly how the pitch went. I think it was the worst presentation I did in my whole life. But the funny thing was, we still won.
Oh, you still won. Okay, this is interesting because many people might think, well, if you won, what's the problem? What's the big deal? But you viewed it as a learning experience.
Yeah, the thing is, when you totally mess up such a presentation, if you totally screw this presentation, that's a big presentation. We had to put a lot of money into this pitch. We actually flew half across the globe just for this presentation. Then you walk into this boardroom meeting and you totally screw up. And afterwards, you still get told you won. Yeah, that gets you thinking. I think everyone views the presentation as probably the second most important part after the pitch deck. And what I learned in this pitch was, or what I actually learned afterwards was, that we won before we even went there.
Oh, I see.
And that was one of those moments when I thought, okay, there might be more to pitching than just coming up with a great idea, having a great pitch deck, and doing a stunning presentation in front of the clients. Maybe there's something else. That was kind of my first, the first dip into the water.
Yeah. Well, it's to me, this is like where you are bumping up against what I call a myth. It's a lie that we in our industry love to tell ourselves called, it's all about the work.
Yeah.
Right. If we just produce brilliant work, and if I show up and do this song and dance and, you know, wave my hands a lot and I'm excited, I will win. My company will win. I will succeed. And there's obviously a lot more happening, a lot more going on there. And it sounds like this was your first experience realizing, there's more involved in a great pitch than just great work.
Well, yeah, and the presentation. I mean, the presentation still, I still believe that the presentation is one of the most important things when it comes to pitching. Mm-hmm. Because a presentation is the moment when you present yourself to the client. You don't present the work you did. You present yourself to the client, and the client gets a short window where he can experience how it would be to work with you, how you are as a person, if he can trust you, if he likes you, stuff like this. This all comes down to trust and credibility and in the end to chemistry. And that's what a presentation is all about.
Well, I love that because I remember you phrased it one time. I heard you say, win the client before winning the pitch. Am I rephrasing it properly?
Yeah, I said, win the client, not the pitch.
Yeah, even better. Yeah, and that's counterintuitive because we think, oh, it's all about they want to buy our great idea. But I think, like you said, once you really start to understand the nature of the business, you realize they're really investing in you and your company. So it's much more about trust first than simply how cool your idea is.
I couldn't agree more. That's what a pitch is all about. It's all about trust. Like, business, doing business in any industry is always about trust. And as I see it, we as a creative industry, we were never told that we are actually running businesses. We always thought we are graphic designers, we are motion designers, whatever. And we always thought we do art. And that's the way we were raised in design school.
So interesting. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that's the same experience you made, when you back in the days, when you first started out.
Very much so. No, very much so. I learned, fortunately, from the way I ran my business. My strategy was, I want to be the dumbest person in the room. So I hired really brilliant creative directors and designers, And I can think of one creative director in particular who was a brilliant pitch guy. But by that, I mean, yes, he was a brilliant designer, but he was even better in building trust and building relationships. And also, he was a master at how to build a presentation that told a story so that when we got into the room, myself, I would set up the story. I would begin the story. He would pick, I would hand the ball to him. He would carry it for a while. Then he would hand it over to my producer. She would finish the story. And it was this beautiful narrative of how we did presentations that was so powerful. And naturally, it was always in person. but there was just a whole lot more to it than simply, oh, I have this cool idea. I have this great design. They're going to love it. It's much more complex than that.
Yeah, and what you just described, the process of handing over the presentation to other people, that's one big part of the presentation. You can't just go there by yourself.
Right.
You have... No, it's like... Every expert has to talk. You as a business owner, you can't do the creative, explaining the creative work, because that's not convincing. That's not credible. You can't, it's like the client is asking now what you're creative or you run the business or do you do the project management? And I think what you did, what you just described is perfectly, because that's what the client wants to see. He wants to see that that's not just you handling all the different jobs. They want to see it. You have a team and that you work together and you function as a team.
Well, here's another little secret that I love to share. And I'm curious for your thoughts on this. I also found an enormous advantage in my being able to sing the praises of someone else. If it's just me bragging about my ideas and how great my company is, it comes off very self-serving. But if I turn to my client in the pitch and I say, by the way, here's Mitch, my creative director. He is so amazing, so brilliant. You're going to love his ideas. Take it away, Mitch. That's a whole different dynamic because I'm singing the praises of someone else, not me. And it works. And then Mitch, of course, says, oh, you know, I'm embarrassed. You know, he then says, no, Joel is the brilliant one. You're going to love working with him. But okay, now let me tell you my part of the presentation.
Yeah, that sounds like a great strategy. That's
well, I use it many times.
Yeah. I've never used this praising, but well, in the end, it probably came down to the same thing, but you perfectly described why it's important to share the presentation between different people, because everyone is an expert in something, but you can't just be an expert in everything. You have to focus on something.
And if you proclaim yourself as the expert and you praise and brag on yourself, it's just bad. it's embarrassing. It doesn't work. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it totally feels strange, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. So, okay, so let's get back to your story of you pitched to this big Asian network that had 50 sub-channels. The pitch went poorly, but you still won. However, you said... Clearly, we had won the pitch before we ever walked into the meeting. So what did that tell you? Once you realized that, what did you start to say, wait a minute, maybe there's more going on here in terms of how pitches get won?
Well, what I learned in this pitch was that, what I actually learned after this pitch was that there was an ongoing relationship between my former partner and this company. So they worked together before, and so they had good experience with him, and that's they trusted him, and that's how we actually got asked to pitch there. I don't think they ever thought they're gonna hire us. So in the end, I think at some point we had also to convince with the creative part. Creativity is important to win a pitch.
Sure.
But it's only half the way. Like, you can't win a pitch solely by the creative work. You also have to have this relationship. And that's what I learned in this pitch. It's like, you want to have a relationship going, ongoing, a good relationship before you present. Because there's just not enough time to build a relationship during this short pitch presentation time. It's
right.
Like 20 minutes, 40 minutes. and you focus on presenting your work, there's no time to build a relationship. There's no time for trust.
Do you think the relationship building even starts before the client asks or invites you into a pitch?
Well, to me, like we, and you tell us in your classes as well, to me, like the relationship is the base. Building the relationship is the base of branding any creative studio. And that's when it starts. Like building the relationship and actually winning the pitch starts way before the client asks you to pitch. It starts with your branding, with your positioning on the market. It starts with how you build your website, the content on your website, how you lay out your different strategies or how you describe your studio to the client.
I love that. I love that because this is something that I think you and I both know this expression from David C. Baker that we love, where he says it's impossible to read the label on the outside of the bottle when you're on the inside, right?
Yeah, that's why I said it in the beginning. Yes.
Yeah, it's so true. And this is often why I also see so many studios that fail to view their brand, their positioning from the perspective of the client. And so they miss certain things, like they don't talk about the who. They don't talk about the why. They just talk about the what. You know, they talk about, we produce this type of work and we do it for these amazing brands, so you should hire us. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't connect. So that branding and positioning, I agree, is ultimately, like you said, it's the foundation of forming a relationship.
And it's the hardest thing to do, isn't it?
Well, sure.
Like, we just rebranded our website and like the RevThink website. And that was... it wasn't easy. You did all the work, so
it was torture. Yeah, of course. But it always is. And this is why positioning, right, is you're never done. It's only better. It's never perfect. You know, you just keep improving it.
Let's be honest. Most creative studios suck at branding themselves. It is a problem of being in the inside of the bottle and trying to read the label on the outside. But in the end, our job as a creative studio and as a creative designer is to brand our clients. That might be like a new logo. It might be communicating his message to his audience, which is also branding. So we as creatives, we do this branding part and positioning all the time. But when it comes to our own branding, we fail. We fail massively because we don't get help. We think we can do it all ourselves. But the thing is, you are inside the bottle and you can't do it on your own. You have to get experts and that help you to brand your studio, to brand your creative company. That's actually something I learned from you. You always need a mentor. You need an expert that helps you. You can't and you shouldn't do it on your own.
Well, I think there's a benefit to getting there faster, right? Because some studios will figure this out, but it might take 10 years. And I would ask anyone, do you want to spend 10 years struggling, trying to breakthrough, trying to build relationships, or do you want to get there faster? Because I think, like you said, if you do it right, you can really get people's attention, get those meetings, start building those relationships right now.
You can start building a relationship with your website. That's actually, I call it the passive way of selling. Your website it's not a brag board. It's your website is a conversion funnel. Your website has the sole reason to convert prospective clients into clients that want to work with you. What I forgot to mention, I would just want to add something to my statement that most creative studios suck at branding. The thing is, clients see that. When you come to a pitch, or even before you come to pitch, they're going to look at your website. And when they research you, when they look you up, and if they don't see what your specialty is, what your expertise is, besides creating nice, beautiful pictures or nice, beautiful images, projects, if clients don't see what your focus is, how can you expect them to trust you in your expertise if you are not able to brand your studio yourself?
Is reminding me of my most painful positioning experience.
Tell me.
When I had this, well, it was this meeting I had with Roger Hyde, who is the senior vice president of marketing at DirecTV. And this is a huge client, huge buyer in the US. six-figure budgets every week throughout the year. And it took me 4 years to get a meeting with this guy at Promax. And I finally had the meeting. And he says, "Nice to meet you. Tell me about your studio." And I said, "You know, we're design, we're collaborative, we love storytelling. I don't know. We're passionate. All the usual crap that that studios say.
A juicy starts, we are.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
are
exactly.
Creative studio or whatever.
Yeah. Right, right. And he stops and he looks at me and he says, "Can I be honest? I've met with about 12 companies like yours today, and you guys all suck at marketing. Why should I trust you to market my brand?" And he had me. He was right. I just looked at him and said, "I don't know."
Did you get a
job? And I never got. No, of course not. No, I blew the opportunity was blown. It was like, oh, well, that was 4 years in the making, and I guess I'll go hit up some other client.
What you just described is so painful. That's a reality to many studios. Many studios do great work, but they are just bad in expressing their value to the client. So they go to the pitch, and the client might actually like the project and the solution they propose, but they never had a winning chance because the client didn't trust them at all. Mm. They didn't trust them that they can fulfill the promise they made in the pitch deck.
So now that you've had this career evolving from the student to the designer to the more senior guy that's doing pitching and so forth, and now you've evolved to consulting studios and production companies on a variety of things, but specifically pitching like we're talking about now, what are some of the patterns that you've been able to see that you can then now apply to your clients to help them, I guess, win more pitches, right?
All you have to do is just look at the big studios and look how they do their website, how they communicate to clients, because they know that they are not communicating to the industry or to other designers. They know they communicate to their clients. And when you research them, look how they do it. Like one great example would be Trollback. That's one of the my favorites, Trollback in the US, or Troika. And there's another one in the UK, which is called Dixon Buxey. Those studios, they have tremendous websites. They have great presentations. And I can only imagine how they do their pitches, but they just nail it. They are big studios. They win great budgets, great accounts. And the thing is, when you research those big players, those great studios which do amazing work, when you research them, you always find that there are five stages or five topics they cover. And I call this the circle of trust, which pretty much is like you have to promise something to a client in your pitch or on your website. Then you have to position yourself, your studio, towards the problem. You have to show your pictures. You have to show that your great work, obviously, your solution.
Mm-hmm, right.
But, and that might all be obvious to that point. But then what almost no one does is you have to prove that what you propose can be done within time, within budget, and to the full satisfaction of the client. And that's where it really gets tough. Like you really have to provide some assurance.
Yeah. Why is that so tough? Because is it just that studios, they're good at implying that they can deliver on those, but they don't actually come out and say it?
Well, it's because we don't want to take responsibility. Isn't that the way?
Wait. Yeah, of course.
I think that's part of our job. We have to, clients ask us to solve a problem, and we have to take responsibility for the solution we deliver. Obviously, we can't take responsibility for success because that's just not in our hands usually. There are many other things, moving parts we have no control over. But what we propose, that needs to work. So we have to guarantee our processes in some way. And that's challenging.
Right.
That's truly challenging. And what you have to do, and that all comes down to being credible and building trust. So when the client trusts you, that's all the assurance he needs.
And is that number three or was
that
number
four? Number four. And the last one is just you have to five. Yeah, we have five. And the last one is we have to push our clients. Not in the sense that we don't want to do it by scarcity or urgency, but in a way that moves the needle towards us. in the end, we have to answer the question why the client should pick us over other studios. And if we can answer this question as in the end of the presentation, that's when we move the needle towards our in our favor.
It's interesting you say that, because I think you and I have both seen there's even a strategy in how ideas are presented, because a lot of studios, of course, our clients ask us, you know, should we present two ideas or three ideas or four ideas, and those types of considerations, right? And
don't get me started on that.
Well, there's even the strategy you're talking about filters down to even how you present ideas, because a lot of studios fail by simply presenting, here's three options, whichever one you like, client, go for it and award us the project and we'll get started. But instead, what you're recommending, I believe, is present an idea that pushes them forward, that might scare them a little bit, that might be something they had never dreamed of. But at the same time, show them an idea that solves the problem, and maybe even show them an idea that is what they asked for. But I just described three different strategies for how you present ideas. And I don't know if many studios really think that much about what are the ideas we're presenting. What's the strategy behind this idea versus this idea versus this one?
Well, my take on that is that, yes, you have to make the boldest move, the boldest promise you can do, but you always have to be able to back it up with an assurance that you can deliver on time. Like, if you want to get some superstars in your next, in your next branding video, you need to be sure that this person is available. You can't pitch, I'm getting...
George Clooney is going to pitch.
Yeah. You can't just say, I'm going to get George Clooney in the movie, in your branding video. And that's impossible. But if you can prove this, if you can assure that he's going to come, if they sign off, they're going to sign off. And that's the beauty of it. But that also involves a lot more work. You have to work behind the scenes. You have to assure to your clients that what the solution you bring to the table will be worth the risk they have to take. But because in the end, they are taking a risk in hiring you. They don't know what you will end up with. They don't know what the solution is, because you don't know yet, do you?
No, and I love what you're saying, because as the studio principal, it may not seem very risky what you're proposing, because you think, I do this all the time, this is easy. But from your client's perspective, their career is on the line.
Totally.
They might lose their job if this is a failure. So there's a stage of the sales cycle that I call closing. And there's a whole methodology to how do you reassure and how do you offer those guarantees so the client really trusts you, can really believe you. And that's a whole stage of the pitch process that a lot of people just leave to chance. They say, well, we showed them our great ideas and we're waiting for them to call us.
I don't think they leave it to chance. I totally agree with everything you just said, but I don't think those studios leave it at chance. They actually think that their work proves their credibility or delivers their credibility.
Fair point. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And what I learned is that any client has a superior. Even if it's the CEO of the company, they also have to respond to their stakeholders or to the audience. So everyone has, the clients have a responsibility. And if they mess up, if you mess up, they mess up, and they actually might just lose their job. And that's reality.
Right.
That's a reality for them. You don't lose your job. You just lose the account, and you probably bill up front 50%. So there's not much of a risk for us creatives, is there?
That's a great point. No, I totally agree. Well, let me sum up what we've talked about, because I think this has been so interesting to go through all of these nuances and concepts behind how studios not only brand and position themselves, but obviously when it comes time to pitch and present and propose ideas. This is what moves our businesses forward, right? I think the cool takeaway that I'm hearing is there actually is a process, a methodology, maybe even a philosophy about how you position your firm and how you pitch your firm. And I hope that's reassuring to people, because it may seem like, well, I'm just making this up as I go. I don't know. It works. We won the job. Let's do it again. But there actually is a body of knowledge out there that works very well.
Yeah, that totally is. Like, it's not, pitching is not us presenting great ideas. As you said, that's a whole, pitching is a whole methodology. And there's a whole framework. Like, the creative work is important to win a pitch. But the thing is that the creative part is also replaceable. Hmm. Creativity is replaceable. And I know many designers won't agree with me. And in my daily work with creative studios, I hear this a lot. And no one really wants to admit to that. But what it comes down to is that a client will actually choose a vendor that he trusts over a vendor that delivers exceptional work.
Yeah, that's a hard truth. Because you're right, the relationship actually trumps the quality of the design or the quality of the work.
That's perfect phrase. I'm going to use this in my course, can I? The relationship trumps the creative.
Yeah, it does. Well, okay, so that's actually a great mention that you just said there about your course, because we should mention that you've been developing for, I think, for a year or more, a way to convey a lot of these ideas and methodology and process of pitching into a course format. What is that going to be?
Well, what I did the last year was I was actually starting to write a book after I did all the research and after I reached out to the big companies, and which included you as well in the beginning. And then I started to write this book, and this book kind of finished and went to my editor early this year. And then I started to work on this. I realized that there's so much more. And I started on building this course, which became this course called Win the Pitch. Still a working title, but it's you'll know what I mean.
Oh yeah,
and
a work in progress.
A work in progress. No, I mean like the course, like Win the Pitch. It's all about pitching to high ticket clients and pitching six and seven figure budgets, and how you can win without relying on being the most creative participant, because there's always someone that's better than you, that's more experienced than you. There's always another studio that's more resourceful than you. So focusing on creativity is never the way to win a pitch. And yeah, I just made a whole course out of that. And I'm hoping to start this, to launch this in a few months, actually.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it go live, because I think there is a big need that studios and creatives can be exposed to. There's actually a way to not just design your deck properly, although there is a lot to that, but there's the whole presentation. There's the whole, how do you form a relationship? How do you win the client, not the pitch? This is a whole like school of pitching, I think, that I'm excited for you to start helping the world with this.
I actually think it's going to blow the mind of some of the students, because it involves a different approach to pitching, an approach that is not based on the creative, but much more on the business side of the pitch of the work. And yeah, what you forgot to mention is that even once you presented, the pitch didn't stop though. There's a follow-up, and you can still leverage your opportunities. And it's not about winning the pitch, but it's winning the client for a prosperous long-term relationship. And I always tell my clients, look, it's not about the pitch you're doing at the moment. It's much more about building a connection, a relationship, and a foundation for trust with the client. So you might not even have to pitch the next time he's going to ask you to help him.
Yeah, that's a much bigger, longer view when you start realizing, hey, if we're going to have this account, we're going to be pitching them regularly over a period of 3, 5 or more years. So yes, let's win this one, but let's also think about how do we build a relationship so totally. That we're invited to the next one and the next one and the next one.
It's like when I was still running my company back in the days, we were invited to so many pitches by the same clients. So once a year, they ask us to pitch and pitch and pitch again. Sometimes we won, sometimes we lost. But it was always this short-term focus which is really frustrating and it's really exhausting at times.
Well, I believe some of the big names that you mentioned earlier, and I know a lot of the behind the scenes of how they approach pitching, is they actually view those relationships as accounts, and they are constantly creating value and uncovering problems before an RFP or a pitch ever even comes to the light of day, so that when finally a need does arise, the conversation has already begun. Like, of course, I'm going to call you, Marco, because you've been in touch with me. You've been thinking about my problems. You've been thinking about solutions. I'm ready to talk. And that's just the nature of a great relationship.
Yeah. And then that's what you just described, is like Blair Enns calls this the inside advantage.
Yes, right. The inside track.
The inside track. And that's so true. Like when you are connected to the client, if you already won his trust, your chances to win the pitch are so much higher because you already proved your credibility, your responsibility. You have a connection to the client. It's like, yeah, that might be the difference between winning and losing.
Well, and think about the result, the impact on a business that improves their win ratio. I know one of our clients that's a motion design studio in LA. They went from winning about 1 out of 3 to winning 2 out of 3. And over the course of a year, let's be honest, that's millions of dollars.
And that were like high ticket pitches, right? Seven figure budgets.
Yeah, exactly.
So imagine what that means for your business if you move the needle from losing 2 out of 3 to winning 2 out of 3. That's a whole different story, isn't it?
That's a huge, yeah. I mean, you're just talking about
shift.
A lot of revenue and a lot of profit. And that's, of course, exciting because it allows you to then produce bigger and more amazing results for your clients.
Yeah. And what it actually does, it allows you to take risks. Like if you build a trust with your client, the client trusts you to take some risks as well.
And that's when it gets fun, right? When you have a relationship, when the client trusts you and you say, hey, I'm going to do something crazy,
totally
wild
crazy
here.
Yeah.
Do you want to go there with me? And he says, I like it. Let's do it.
Yeah, I trust you. And that's the perfect thing. That's what you want. You want your clients to say, yeah, let's do it. But you can't, you wouldn't convince your client if he's not trusting you, if you have no relationship, if you are... Yeah, just someone he invited to a pitch and a studio that just delivered some pitch decks.
Yeah, just a bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
Well, Marco, this has been a great conversation. I'm going to suggest that if anyone listening is curious to find out more, that of course they can go to revthink.com and read some of your articles that are there. I guess I can also share your email, marco@revthink.com. So yeah. If someone wants to find out more about your course or how you work with clients in Europe or in other parts of the world, they should just reach out.
And anyone that's interested in the course, just sign up to the RevThink newsletter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we have a mailing list. And of course, we'll continue to make announcements on the podcast. And if you're a business owner, we have our 7 Ingredients Facebook group. So people that are owners of studios or production companies should request access there and join that group, because we're always talking about business and pitching and other things like that in that group.
And it's so exciting. It's actually, I'm in this group too, and it's great. It's like a lot of like-minded designers and creatives and business owners. And it's just fun talking to all those people.
Yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it too. Well, thanks again for the conversation. I hope it's been valuable to people listening out there that have always kind of wondered, is pitching just something we all do and have to figure out on our own? Or is there a school of pitching that I can learn from and increase my success? So thanks again for being on the podcast, Marco.
Yeah, thanks. I had a great time. It was nice talking to you. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Rev Thinking Podcast. For more free resources, updates on upcoming events, or to learn how RevThink consultants advise creative entrepreneurs, please visit revthink.com.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.